This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Two things. First of all, I've been in this job now for 12 years, and I still haven't learned that when you promise to do something months ahead, that day will eventually come. And when I saw this title, I thought, how could I possibly have agreed to do that? Because I know very little about it. But then I realised it's a seminar, so the key is that I don't actually say a great deal, but we get each of you to contribute. That's the first thing. The second thing is that I worked last weekend. Don't say I went actually to a five-star hotel because one of the perks of my job, well, it's a perk, I organise a big annual conference, 500-600 people, and a few other conferences. So the company I work with invite me occasionally to a hotel for the weekend with a few other conference organisers just to test it out. And it's usually very boozy, as this one was. But funnily enough, in the middle of this boozy-do, somebody said, the big problem I have is how, you know, what do we do for the last session? And we all said, that's really, really difficult. And I suddenly realised that this is the last session. In fact, it is literally the last session, isn't it? And I did say, I don't think anybody will stay. So well done to be here. This is the title that we've got. I can look over there, can't I? Effective Collaboration and Networking. Recruiters, University and Suppliers. Now, I did actually raise a query about what we meant by suppliers. What would your guess be what we mean by suppliers? Because I think sometimes terminology is an issue. What kind of suppliers might you think of? Because you're all in the higher education sector, aren't you, basically? So, right. You see, I hadn't thought about that till a few minutes ago when Anne-Marie Martin said that. They might be talking about schools and colleges. Suppliers, to me, are agencies. Agencies that businesses work with to develop their marketing campaigns, their assessment processes and the like. So I've actually left suppliers out because I wasn't entirely sure what they meant. So what I'm going to do, if I can find my... is set the scene very quickly, pose a few ideas and questions which are from my experience, limited as it is. Then we'll have an open discussion around those questions, and most importantly, we'll end by 4:30. Does that sound like a good way? We might even end a little earlier.
Well, we started early, Carl, so...
All right, so we'll end by 4:15. So setting the scene, I asked myself, is this really an appropriate time? Is this the best time to start thinking about effective collaboration? And whilst I was sat through the last session, a bit about employability, and a bit about careers, and we were thinking about all of the issues that are going on at the moment, I suppose there are advantages in trying to move agendas forward when there's utter confusion. I mean, every day we're sort of having to take a new stance on what we think about this statement from this minister or that minister, because it just seems that the whole higher education scene is emerging and moving, changing directions, largely as a result of political whims, if you ask me. But we've got the Brown Review, and you've been talking about that today, and we've had the government's response, and my suspicion is that the Brown Review will not actually survive. They'll cherry-pick bits from it, but it won't be the Brown Review, and that I find personally quite frustrating, because I saw it as a jigsaw, and you have to look at all the pieces and put them together to see whether it works or not. And then, of course, on top of that, we've got the Comprehensive Spending Review, and clearly funding is going to be a huge issue right across the public sector, and particularly in higher education. And then we heard just a few minutes ago something around the employability position statements, which on the surface, again, the employers would certainly say, what a great idea. And then you talk to people in higher education about the practicalities of it, what actually does it mean, and is a statement the same as action, etc. The growing importance of league tables, we seem obsessed with them in schools and higher education. Certainly, I've been to a few breakfasts and dinners recently where vice-chancellors have turned up who 5 years ago wouldn't be seen dead. And the reason in those sort of gatherings, and the reason they're there is because they're very concerned about improving their employability position. And just a week ago, I had an email from someone I know reasonably well, but not that well to expect to get emails from him. And he was just showing me how far up the league table his university had moved, because in employability terms. And I congratulated him and said, I hope that next year you don't drop down, because as a Huddersfield Town supporter, I've had a lifetime of watching them go up and down league tables. So you have to take your enjoyment when you can. And then finally, I've added to this the rising levels of graduate unemployment. In this country, we really have a very serious problem of youth unemployment. I think it's one in five young people, announced just yesterday, I think one in five young people unemployed. That sounds like a phenomenally high proportion. And when we look at graduates, the latest figures that have come out from the HEXA report was, I think, 8.9%. Does that ring a bell? Up 1% on the previous year, and the worst set of figures for 17 years when I was in graduate recruitment. It's a lot worse then than it is now percentage-wise, but of course there weren't anything like the same numbers of graduates. And as a parent of an unemployed graduate, who I'm actually meeting tomorrow to have breakfast with and to check his CV and to see how many job applications he's got out there and probably to sign him a cheque, I keep forgetting the word. I think my Christmas box has complete whatever I wanted. I ain't going to get it, am I?
It's going up on YouTube.
I know. God, oh, otherwise. I don't belong to this world. I mean, 20 years ago, I'd have survived quite well, I think. I always put my foot in it. But it is very worrying, and it will seriously impact. If we don't get these figures down in the next few years, and our predictions are that the market will turn. We've had 2 to 3 years, and that's been the trend in graduate employment or unemployment. It's a 2 to 3 year dip, and then things improve. And when they do improve quite dramatically, normally, in the private sector. And the big question is, will it be 2011, or will it be beyond that, 2012? Anecdotally, the indications are in the private sector it will improve next year, but it's going to have to improve a great deal to bring those figures down. And it's the one thing that really worries families, I think, about which way to go with supporting their children. So I think there's quite a lot actually that says that effective collaboration between institutions and employers is actually something we should be working really hard at. How do you go about it? Knowing me, knowing you, ha ha. Anybody remember that? Not the song, but the Steve Coogan playing Alan Partridge. I've actually pinched this from a presentation that I did with Val Butcher, who some of you will know. And we actually did an act, a 10-minute act on Knowing Me, Knowing You. And I'll give you some idea. Yeah, in fact, I'll give you the ideas now. We get a lot of these, all lawyers are crooks. Type statements, and employers are often saying things. And I've heard all of these have actually been said to me. Universities just see us as cash cows. We've got deep pockets, and they want as much of the money as they can get from us. Or whenever we go see a university, and this could be a career service, or it could be a department in terms of developing some CPD or co-funding a degree. There's this sense that, they can see the pound signs as soon as we walk through the door. And another one, is just how slow universities deliver in comparison to businesses. And I have to say that I have had personal experience of that, working with the sector and with some individual institutions. In fact, I sat on a board at one institution, and they brought their year programme for the following year, and I raised a question about staff development and why there wasn't a budget for it. And I got one of these very bland answers. And then 12 months later, we had the same very nicely produced report. And again, I asked the same question. And 3 months later, they said, you've served your term of office. I'm sure it was for longer than 2 years. But things were moving so slowly, whereas in business, that kind of question would have got you an immediate answer. And either they'd have acted on it, or I would have walked out. I said, right, you know, what's the point of me coming here and contributing to something if there's not going to be any progress? That was quite an extreme example. Another one, my PA will vouch for this, is, you know, why use one word when a dozen will do? And if you go into my office and look at my files, you still have traditional files. The thickest files are all to do with work that I do on behalf of AGR with the higher education sector. By a mile, by a mile. The Burgess Review, you know, the degree classifications, that's another sentence that I'm serving. The files are that thick. And we've been going for 5 years. And we still haven't launched it. And I'm not being critical here. I know the difficulties of getting something like that after 400 years of a degree classification system moving. But for employers, that actually always comes across as being incredibly frustrating. And not many employers actually stay in a job, that job, for 5 years. You'll have had three or four different people turning up. And I'm not so much the insular a bit, but actually for some employers, especially smaller businesses, just penetrating an institution can be quite difficult. And some of them are really big and split-sided. You know, who do you approach as an employer? You know, is there a one-stop shop? Where is it? Etc. And then, because I'm even-handed, some of the comments I've heard from the higher education sector and what Val would say is, well, you know, actually as employers, you're very quick to criticise and you don't actually give us credit for the things that we have tried to change. And employability and skills is an absolutely classic example of that. And my members, I'm constantly saying to them, you know, you've come out with this lawyers are crooks statement about, you know, universities don't do anything on the skills agenda. Actually, they're doing a great deal. I'm not saying it's perfect, and I'm not saying you're not entitled to say those graduates who come through our assessment process lack something, but do give credit for the progress that's actually been made. You know, and the fact that employers have this money in their back pocket and doesn't mean that they should actually dictate all the terms, that if they're working in partnership, they're working in partnership. And, of course, the classic is, and I get accused of this all the time, is, well, you know, one employer says that this is what they're looking for, and another employer says they're looking for. There's no common voice amongst employers. They don't articulate very clearly, as employers, what their needs are. And we could look at a series of reports from institutes, from organisations like CIHE, it is CIHE still, isn't it? CBI, IOD, Chambers of Commerce. This one that's come out, it's over there for you, that little snippet on the and my own organisation, and they will say different things. And sometimes they don't say these things very clearly. And sometimes they say things that have actually already been said some years before. So there's a number of, and I'm going to try and go back now, there's all of this going on with different, it's almost as if it's a Man United, Man City kind of relationship. You know, you just feel you have to be critical of the other partners. And what Val and I came up with, we thought that what was really essential was that you had these three key components in place. Shared agendas, mutual trust and respect, and this common language. And the shared agendas, I think there are many of them, and I'd actually like you to think about some of them. You may already have some in mind. The mutual trust and respect, I think a lot of that really comes about if and I'm thinking particularly of employers, if they would just actually take the time to find out what's been going on in the institution and to listen more carefully to what the institution might be saying. And it's through that I find I develop respect for other points of view. Listening skills are really, really important. We're going through that process in my organisation at the minute. We've just had an away day, and it was about team building, and then the team just decided to fall out. I've never fallen out in 12 years. First away day on team building, and 3 days later, predominantly female office, and no one speaking to each other. But actually, yeah, it's all right, they know it. We've been through it all. And it's because that they hadn't actually respected other people's points of view. And if you just sort of listen to where somebody's coming from, then they wouldn't have got to that state. Everything, the garden is rosy now, and everybody's on really good terms, and it had nothing to do with me whatsoever. And the common language. We use terminology all the time that it's difficult for people outside of higher education to understand, and vice versa. And we've heard some of this terminology just in the last hour. We throw these phrases out. And I've worked with higher education for years, and I still have to sometimes, stop and think, what did that acronym actually mean, or what does that statement mean? Pedagogy is a word that I have tried this out all in the last week, right, to about 10 people. Not very scientific, but not one had ever heard the word or understood it. Not heard it. And yet, I'd be very surprised if I go to a meeting of Burgess Review Group and I don't hear it said at least 10 times. And when you're on the outside and you look around, you realise there's 30 people in this room, the only one who's struggling to understand what's going on is you, and it's to do with language. So I think finding a common language is important. And that ESEC project that Brenda talked about, we used to run joint conferences, and we actually got to the point where we had to rewrite the marketing materials using different words, different languages, to attract different audiences. And I think there's something in that. So, these are the issues I put up there, but I'm quite happy to switch them. What are the barriers to effective collaboration that you've come across? And as important, if not more important, how can we overcome them? What are the shared agendas that are out there? And I'd love to hear some examples of good practice. But I also think if people are prepared on camera to share bad examples, what we can do, we can sort of disguise your voices and just do a silhouette so that no one identifies you. You know, I understand you've flat voices. An actor. We'll get an actor to do it for you. And also, I think it's worth just exploring some of the networks that might exist, because networks are often there to help bring more effective working and partnerships between different organisations. Does that sound like a reasonable... Is that really? Because if not, we're stuffed. Can't think what else to say. OK, so shall we take them in turn? I'll leave them up there. I've mentioned the sort of barriers I find, things like lack of respect, lack of understanding, and this issue with language. But are there other barriers?
I think from a business point of view, it's the pressure of time. Time budgets in business are what... Sorry, I've broken my own rules. I thought I was mic'd up from the bump. Obviously not. Having been in business for a long time, you just got no time to do anything. I mean, I said to the global head of HR of a major retailing business, what's the problem? She said, we don't have time to train anybody anymore. We need them to be up and ready, bang out the door. And I know in my own business life, the other bit of my life, which is still media, you're just making decisions all the time. So if you then hit an environment where you don't get an answer for 4 months, it's kind of shot. So I think the time cycles between business and university is very different. I think it's a massive issue. Mm.
And if you if you find a willing employer to sit on a working group, when you hold the meetings and how many meetings you're planning to have, that creates barriers and probably puts a lot of people off. Yeah. Or they come along to the first meeting and then you don't see them again. I get accused of doing that, and I'm full-time working in this job. So time is a big issue.
But it's the cycles of time, it's the speed cycles of time.
Yeah.
It's different.
The speed to action.
Yeah.
Mm. Any others?
I agree entirely about time, but I think that one of the other issues is that they're just looking in totally different directions. They simply have different fundamental purposes.
They want different things.
They want different things out of the exchange, really. And I think that the best sense of having a shared agenda is where you actually come together to do the same thing, whereas what we're talking about here, HE is about different things from business. Does that make sense? Different fundamental purposes.
Is that partly sometimes to do with a lack of clarity about what you are trying to achieve? So that people come together and you haven't actually got it clear from the outset what you're hoping to gain from it?
Possibly. It's about communicating what you are about. But, I mean, fundamentally, companies want to be successful in order to stay in business, whereas I think maybe it won't be the case in the future, but certainly higher education sees itself as providing services of a more general nature and probably hasn't until now had the same concerns about whether or not they will still be existing in the future. I mean, they'd be more permanent part of the infrastructure, whereas companies are probably more focused on the day-to-day, simply surviving, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, thank you. Rebecca Ward from the Northwest Universities Association. Just picking up on that point of kind of mutual benefit, I think graduate internships are an area where that's really evident, and it's actually very explicitly demonstrated in the Northwest, where we have placement schemes funded by the European Social Fund, where the beneficiary is very definitely the individual, and placement schemes funded by ERDF, where the beneficiary is the business. And the thing we found with the ERDF-funded project is that SMEs just really don't have a strong grasp of how a graduate intern can help their business, how it can benefit. And the good practice in that project, I think, is that the university goes in a consultant role alongside the graduate to help them identify a business problem. The graduate then works on the programme for 8 weeks to 3 months, and produces a report at the end of it. So the graduate gets experience of employability skills and so on, and the business ends up with a report and hopefully a solved business problem. And it's proving to be really successful in leading to full-time employment and getting a graduate into an SME for the first time. But I think that kind of hand-holding process is really important for SMEs.
That's a really good point. Thanks for that. I've got two here. We'll take you first and then Brenda.
I was just going to follow on from that because Mary McFarlane from the University of Salford. I am currently running a ESF-funded employability training programme and also a HEFCE-funded graduate internship programme where we are paying graduates' wages for a 240-hour placement. And the issues I'm finding, you know, this is a very, very clear benefit to businesses, to the university and to the graduates doing the placements. And we've got a lot of businesses who have benefited enormously, who have really engaged with it. But what I do find is that there are certain businesses who have very different expectations and are trying to kind of push the university into a paradigm they recognise. So they think we're a graduate recruiter or that we're a recruitment agency and we are going to identify a student, a graduate for them, place them as if we were a... as if we were a recruitment agency.
Down the high street, yeah.
Or they think that we should be treating them as a customer and they will tell us what their demands are and we will respond to them. And as I say, we've got lots and lots of small to medium employers who have engaged with us fantastically, who have understood what it is that we can provide. But we've had to do a lot of expectations management to explain that we are not a recruitment agency. You are not asking us to provide you with a worker that you can simply slot into place as if we were Manpower or Kellys or whatever.
Yeah. But you've found you've taken the lead, but you're trying to find a common ground.
Yeah.
Right, and that has worked.
Very well.
And if it doesn't work, you elbow that company, you just... Because employers are not homogeneous. They're in it for all kinds of reasons. It might be a very new business or a very old-fashioned business. A lot of small businesses are just for the first. They may be taking their first ever graduate. You know, the owner and all the staff may never have had the experience themselves of higher education. And I think there is something about how you handle or manage the graduate intern who comes in.
They are non-expert recruiters.
Yeah, they don't have
different from Ernst & Young speaking.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and that's a really important point to bear in mind when we're talking about employers. I mean, at my business, we only employ 6 people at AGR, so I am the recruitment manager. Fortunately, I'm an HR professional, but I may not be. So I'll be coming into it completely fresh.
It's Brenda Little again from OU. Picking up on a point on the time aspect... I think more and more institutions and probably organisations always did, businesses, but having to account for that time in money terms and costing it and where that money is going to come from. I mean, there have been over the recent years quite big strands of development funding, let's say, coming out of HEFCE, Strategic Development Fund, and that in a way that allowed people to try and set up collaborations, to network. That all takes a lot of time, has to be costed time, and I'm just worrying in the sense of the new regime, where will be that sort of, it's not slack exactly, but where will be the monies available to say, well, I'm doing this. There isn't an, at the moment, there isn't an obvious tangible outcome, which will, you know, be payback money for additional students or whatever. But will there be that scope for people to, in a sense, do that collaborative work where there may be implicit assumptions that at the end of the day, there might be monetary benefits for both parties, but getting to that end point and the process itself, which is often the very important bit, and the important bit of building up the mutual trust, the shared language, the agendas, where will, how will that time sort of be costed?
Can I pick up on that? I think that's a really interesting point, because there's that the other element of language, which is the language within the institution, and we can't assume that any institution has actually got its own shared language of how it perceives itself in the wider community, and you know, I spent far too much of my time, sometimes it feels like, going out to networking events and meeting businesses and trying to sort of, you know, make another 20 relationships that I might be able to build over the course of an evening, and I often see a head of school or a member of the research and enterprise unit or somebody. You know, some of those people I can trust implicitly that there's, you know, the kind of, there's a marketing party line that they know what the products are. Do I know what the products are? Do you know what I mean?
So I do.
And
I
when it's when they're saying we don't know who to talk to, when we're going out and engaging, we could actually, if we're not careful, we can make the whole situation even worse. You know.
What's your role, incidentally?
I'm graduate employability developer. So,
right.
But I was originally very locally based, so it was supported by the local council to respond to the low, higher skill level in Norfolk. So it was very much about engaging that.
If you don't mind, we might come back to you when we're talking about networks in a few minutes, because you've mentioned there that you go out and join networks with employers. You just reminded, when you were talking about, you know, different languages within the institution, we mentioned earlier about the sort of one stop, you know, where do employers start? And I remember being at an international conference, actually being held in Birmingham, and there were delegates from institutions across Europe and Asia. And most of the people there said that an issue within their institution was actually getting departments to share their employer contacts. Yeah.
43 databases.
This is 43. I'm Anne Goff from Wolverhampton FE College, and I'm new to the FE and HE, so I come out of private and voluntary sector, so it's a very new language. But there are, and there are 40 odd databases, so does the university have similar number, but they're individualised, and
there's a lot of ownership
around that needs to be broken down. So there's a lot of barriers within institutions in terms of new people coming in or within their own staff, which causes a real difficulty. For me, one of the key barriers is actually it's developing that relationship. And I think it's Brenda's point, is the time it takes to go out to every business that take. I do graduate internships. To actually understand the business and what their needs are, understand their pressures and try and address those, then take them back. And I think there's a challenge to HE and FEs to say, can you respond to those businesses' needs? Because so it is a mutuality, but you have to be able to say, well, if you've got to be flexible and responsive, and that's what business is about, time, they're there to develop a profit line, but they need support to be able to grow their business, which is what they're seeing graduates are able to bring in that higher level skills. But there has to be that responsiveness to institutions to be able to respond to that. And I think that's one of the barriers because of the way funding is, the way curriculum set up against the vocational. I think, you know, it's not easy. I'm not saying institutions should be able to turn on a penny, but that's some of the challenges that I'm taking back. And even if you can come halfway with something, it starts developing that relationship.
Do any institutions have, like, business development managers? Whose job it is to work on behalf of different departments and go out and do that. So does that help to overcome that issue of time?
I think what we have started to develop in Wolverhampton is that those people start talking to each other, because actually some business development employer engagement posts, very much you might have six or seven in a college, you might have several in the university, but they don't actually talk to each other. And for me, it isn't about databases. It's actually sitting down with those people who have established that relationship with those businesses, understand those businesses and what their needs are. So it's them being able to actually share that information with you.
This word relationship is coming out quite a lot, because both of you were talking about relationships and how much you've got to invest in them for it to be effective. Just if we were now looking at examples of good practice... Or were you going to say?
Yeah, well, I think that's Derek Gribble again, South Devon College. And I think, you know, picking up this theme really is the fact it's about building a relationship. So it's that you've got to know your business. You've got to know what that business, where that business is now, where that business wants to go, how it's going to get there, and how it knows when it's arrived. You know, it's forging that relationship. And I think that's the key to really, because you need to get the business on board with you, because you're wanting to help that business grow and develop. Mm. And I think that's absolute key to any sort of success. And I think the other situation is that if you're talking to a business, you've got to act like a business. You've got to respond like a business. You know, you don't shut down over the summer break. You're there for that business. And I think that's part of the things that we are actually learning in South Devon that we need to do. And yes, we do have a one-stop shop, as we call it. We do have a business-facing department, you know, that really is talking. And yes, we have all the other problems of about going back to curriculum and speaking with them. But I think we're winning the battle in sort of saying, yes, we're here to serve the community in a way that we can, and we're playing to our strengths as best as we can.
What shouts out to me about what you just said is it's about enhancing your credibility with business. That counts for a great deal. So you're selling. You're really selling your service.
Yeah.
I mean, just on the good practice bit, my landlord is Warwickshire County Council and the University of Warwick. And I work in an innovation centre, so you've got... It's like an incubation base for new businesses. We're the only sort of long-term tenant. But the university comes in. They'll put on a lunch, because there are 30 firms there. So they'll put... Anyone will, you know, employers, because there's no catering, so they're offering free sandwiches, they're in there, and then they do a presentation. So they're actually selling their services and building up their credibility and their links and the relationship bit. Now, that works really well for us. It must be a bit more difficult if it's an industrial estate where each unit's totally separate, but, you know, it's worth thinking about, isn't it?
I was just going to follow on from that, actually, that... So it's Phil Ely again from University for the Creative Arts, which is Kent and Surrey, not London, in case you wondered. What we're doing is putting a lot more focus on informal events and informal networks to create communities of practice. And obviously that's easy to do in the creative industries to a degree, because there are individuals in our communities who feel they want to belong to a larger community. But we've recognised that course teams, let's say, have their own databases and their own networks. We've recognised that there are formal professional networks that we can plug into. But what we're trying to do is to host more social events on the university campus that facilitate exchanges of ideas and working with partners in a less, I guess, arrogant way, saying actually we're all equal partners in this, arts partnerships or design partnerships locally, and saying, well, actually let's all meet informally and let's discuss some of those needs. And that seems to have worked really well.
It does work well.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And what do you think the magnet is? You know,
there usually is a hook. There's usually a hook in there. There's usually something, a public lecture or a talk.
Right.
Or there's some knowledge exchange. There's something there for somebody to come to. That does help.
And what time of day?
Usually in the evenings when it's challenging to keep the buildings open. And, we have to incentivize staff, but we engage students in that activity.
Yeah.
So we use students as...
Great ambassadors, aren't they?
Yeah,
I like that idea. And again, I'm just thinking back. I've been invited recently, but I know a local university that would actually put on a presentation from an academic. It might be a piece of research, but it's always something quite sexy, you know, that you would have a wide range of interest. So you arrive, you have a soup and a sandwich, and then you have this, and then they open a bar, and it's all about building those relationships. And that works. I mean, the businesses, that's how they exist.
Yeah, there's got to be a hook. You know,
these B2Bs, they're happening all the time. I work with a small business as a non-exec director, and I got them to start linking in with the local chamber of commerce. And at first, it was just so they could actually see how other businesses operate, but they came back, you know, with lots of contacts that they could actually start doing business with. What networks are you... part of?
Well, the project that first brought me to the UEA was co-partnered with the Norfolk Network, which has come out of YKTO in Cambridge. So that was a high innovation small company network, which was fantastic because that gave us a great membership in the creative and digital areas. And I put on joint events with them. So we have a creative industries evening every year. We'll have sort of six or seven speakers targeted at graduates. Third years are more than welcome, second years are more than welcome, but it's a graduate event. It's open to all graduates in Norfolk, not just UEA. And we get about 35 employers coming along because we sell it to them as a networking event, and it's advertised through the Norfolk Network. We're doing some work at the moment where we're trying to get, where we are getting the IOD, the FSB, the network and the chamber around the same table with us and saying, okay, what kind of event would your members want us to put on? So we're actually trying to deliver engagement events to the business community that's based on their definition. And we bring out very much the kind of student employer engagement work that I do is really based on a networking model. And increasingly, we're trying to tie that in with giving the students a bit of coaching beforehand so they're not terrified. And so it's tied in with coaching for work experience. And then we're introducing them to alumni mentors in a networking setting or something like that. So there's a whole heap of stuff.
Anyone else got any other ideas? Yeah.
Within Wolverhampton, I work very closely with the local strategic partnership because this is about working not only with HE and FE, but with the PCT, with the local authority, with local businesses, with the police and the businesses. And so this has become an agenda now. And we had a workshop led by the chief exec of the local authority last week from piece of work that I'm doing in the modelling. I'm trying to develop a one-stop shop model for the city, not for the institutions, but everybody's got to buy into that and buy into that model. And I think that's the way forward and it is about then saying, well, what can I get out of that? And there is a little bit, particularly with the public sector transformation agenda as well, because people are coming out of jobs where they've been, in the PCT for 10 years, 20 years, and they've suddenly got to find themselves new employment or new training. And therefore, it's building that relationship and saying, right, how can we, similar model to doing graduate internships, how can we develop that and support people? And that's about the flexibility of the use of HE and FE colleges to deliver some of that and the mentoring. But clearly it needs to be put in at a very high level and central to the economic as well as the social regeneration agenda within
the city. Mm. And if you can get all buyers into that and get it onto that agenda, I think that's the way.
Yeah, sure.
Sorry, can I just mention employer forums? I don't know how many. I mean, presumably most of us have got some kind of employer forum.
Can we just have a show of hands on that? Employer forums? A minority.
All right.
Or something like one.
Something like it. They do take a variety of forms, don't they? I mean, ours has taken 2 years really to kind of find its feet, and that's because in the drafting of the local economic partnership, thank you, that we've been asked to to actually use our employer forum to feed into the Employment and Skills Board for higher level skills for Norfolk. I mean, obviously, talking predominantly about the immediate vicinity, and it's another question, national and international. Mm. You know, it could go a completely different direction. But back to the first comment, the whole business about language, I think how we use employer forums is critical, because I think, you know, I mean, we really set ours up with the understanding that there was an employability gap, that we weren't necessarily going to be speaking the same language, and to actually get a group of lecturers and support staff and employers around a table and start the discussion off by saying, let's work on the principle we don't understand each other and we'll go from there, has made it an incredibly productive process.
Mm. Quite dynamic, I would think. Jane, and then...
Thanks. Jane Artes, can I just ask a question? I was hearing conversations recently that suggested to me that the LEP networks that are going to emerge are not going to be anything like as well resourced as the regional structures that are being dismantled. I mean, do people have a view about what the impact of dismantling the regional development agencies and all the other government offices and so forth is going to have on these business partnership arrangements?
I think it depends on where you live, doesn't it? Because, I mean, where Norfolk wasn't successful, as an example, they're now, they've signed off a LEP with Suffolk. So Suffolk will have had its sub-regional economic partnership that sat under EDA, and Norfolk had its sub-regional economic partnership that sat under EDA. That's two offices that are going to have to be rolled into one in some way to support the two counties. But I know an awful lot of worried people in the Shreps who have absolutely no idea of how they're going to be able to continue the sort of work that they're doing. But I think it's
going.
Yeah.
How often have we heard that today? Yeah.
Sorry, there was just another dimension I think to it as well, and that's the idea that universities can partner up together around particular sectors. We've been delivering with University of Winchester and Arts University College Bournemouth a business and graduate support program called Creative Advantage. Now that's been kind of sub-regional in a way, because it's been covering Dorset, Hampshire and Surrey, and I think it's allowed us to rightly put the focus on creative industries, but we've able to recognise that we're not in competition with each other, that each institution has individual strengths in particular subsectors, and that actually going forward, now we've got people that we've worked with on the ground that we can say, well, okay, next time round, or if somebody approaches us, certainly in terms of if a business approaches us for, let's say, performing arts, and performing arts isn't our area, we know us straight away where we can go to a graduate talent pool. So I think that partnering with universities across sectors is actually a good way of facilitating.
I'm Marilyn Compretta. I'm from the Institution of Engineering and Technology. I work in the Academic Accreditation Department. We also accredit company schemes as well, so we've got quite a large interest in seeing tighter contacts between the universities and industry. As you know, technology and engineering has sort of widened quite a lot over the past few years, especially technology. And so we have quite a lot of universities coming to us for accreditation. Now, part of reviewing the programmes will be to look at the industrial influence onto the programme. and we do actively encourage them to form an industrial committee. It's a very important part of running an accredited programme because it's forever changing. We need to make sure that the information on the programme is totally current and perhaps relevant to local industry. Now, through the industrial committees, they then helps to develop more availability with involvement on the projects in the programme, and then more chances of 6 months in industry where then graduates are then, can then get work possibly afterwards if they're impressed by the work and the work is assessed there. Now, we also have... So what actually happens, it's a membership foundation, an institution, where we're trying to help young engineers progress through their engineering career to then become professional engineers. So we provide the stepping stones. And so the next stepping stone after graduating with an IET accredited programme would hopefully to be gone to a company accredited scheme, which helps with even more stepping stones. So we're trying to create tighter links between those, and that's quite hard to do as well. You'd think it would be easy. But earlier we were talking about how could we sort of try and... There was an idea maybe universities could be more involved in the CPD schemes in companies. And maybe there could be a sort of transfer of knowledge. So instead of a transfer of cash for what they do, maybe say, well, you know, if you get more involved in our programmes and come onto our industrial committee and have the influence on the programme, then we perhaps can help steer you in your CPD programmes. Just an idea.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that. I'm conscious that people are beginning to drift away and time presses on. I think everybody's contributed. Is there anyone burning issues somebody wants to raise? I was just going to touch on something that businesses are really good at, and that's public relations. You know, if you're doing something well with employers, then, you know, think of using the media through your own PR teams, which I think you've all got, to get that message out there, because that's a type of a network. And one thing I've discovered in life is that success breeds success, you know, and if you're doing something well with one organisation, you guarantee their competitors will think, we're missing out here, you know, we want a slice of that. So, you know, to feel confident enough to do that. And there's some great stories in there that, you know, the local papers and professional journals will pick up on. So that's, you know, part of the professional journals for an industry or sector or profession. If there's nothing else that's a burning issue, I just want to share one more slide with you. when I did the Knowing Me, Knowing You bit with Val Butcher, Val's keen on card sorts. You know what card sorts are? You give, like, playing cards out with words on, and you ask them to put them in rank order. So what you do is you separate your employers and your higher education people, and you give them the same set of cards, and they rank them, and invariably they come out with very much the same priority list. And these were some of the things that we looked at. And there are lots of shared agendas. These aren't particular activities. It's just what... you know, employers, and I would suspect academics and universities would look for in their graduates, and that to me is the sticking plaster. You're not going to tell me any employer wouldn't say, I want all of those things, and that literally, and similarly, any academic or vice chancellor. And I'll just end up with how I came to this. Before I had this job, I was actually a recruiter. And I was on at a meeting that AGR had set up, where they had a vice-chancellor came in, and he was very clever. Well, they're all clever, aren't they? And we'd published a publication called Skills for Graduates in the 21st Century, which is still, I think, the best description of what employability is all about. And he said, I've read your book. Oh, wise man. And he said, these are the things that you say you're looking for. And he turned round and he says, and don't you think I want the same bloody skills when they arrive at my institution? And, you know, and everybody suddenly thought, yeah, so we actually are working very much towards the same ends. Thank you for your contributions, all of you. We have finished early. You've still got time to take me down the pub now. and that's it. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you for staying the course.
That was a real toilet.
But thank you to Carl, as ever, sparkling. Just want to say before you go, the key issue here in media is you find talent, you recruit talent, you reward talent. And the reason why I set this session up is the real reason for this isn't just about student employability. It's that this country needs the best talent to remain competitive. So just, if I've done one last takeaway, it's that one. Thank you.
Yeah, good point. Okay.
Yeah.